Ukraine's president says there needs to be meaningful talks with Russia. The warring sides have held several meetings despite the relentless fighting on the ground. But do these talks serve any purpose? And can they end the fighting? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Mohammed Jamjoum. Civilians under siege in Ukraine's Mariupol are experiencing some of the most relentless fighting since the war began. Russia sees the southern port city as vital for its military campaign, while Kyiv accuses Moscow of committing war crimes. But despite the lack of de-escalation, a small group is trying to end the war through dialogue. Representatives from both sides have met several times. There are three main points: a ceasefire, an end to all hostilities, and humanitarian corridors. But there's been no progress so far, and the attacks are continuing. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky says the only way to stop the conflict is through talks.
I'm sure you understand that negotiations are not easy or pleasant, but they are needed. It's about life. Ukraine's always sought a peaceful solution. Moreover, we're interested in peace now because we count everyone killed. For it's important to us, every destroyed family, every destroyed house, because we're Ukrainians, and for us, a person is priceless.
Moscow says it launched its invasion to, quote, demilitarize and denazify Ukraine, but insists it's ready to stop fighting if Kyiv meets its conditions, which includes Ukraine ceasing all its military action to defend itself. Moscow also wants assurances of so-called neutrality. It wants Ukraine to amend its constitution to prevent it from joining any political or military bloc in the future. The Kremlin also wants Ukraine to acknowledge the Crimean Peninsula as Russian territory. And it wants Kyiv to recognize the separatist regions of Donetsk and Lugansk as independent. All right, let's introduce our panel in Kyiv. Volodymyr Kulik, head research fellow at the National Academy of Sciences of Ukraine. In Berlin, Ulrich Bruckner, professor of political science at Stanford University in Berlin. And in Moscow, Pavel Felgenhauer, a defense and military analyst. A warm welcome to you all, and thank you so much for joining us on Inside Story today. Volodymyr, let me start with you today. From your vantage point, is there actually any point to the talks that have been going on between Ukraine and Russia of late?
A point is to find ways to stop bloodshed, to stop murders of Ukrainian populations that Russia is pursuing so far. So the only tangible result of these talks so far has been humanitarian corridors. So I read the reports that every day hundreds or sometimes thousands of people are led to safety from cities like Mariupol or Kharkiv or Chernihiv or suburbs of Kyiv, where they were held in cellars under the shelling. So they were without food, without water, without safety. So that's good. Anything else is kind of debatable. Maybe Russia just winning the time to bring more weapons and more troops. Maybe Ukraine wins time to bring more weapons from the West. So everything is possible. How sincere the parties are about wanting to reach a result, I cannot say.
Volodymyr, do you think that, from your perspective, do you think that Russia is sincere in trying to find a peaceful solution right now?
I doubt it. First, I doubt anything Russian leadership, is doing. They keep saying different things about their demands. Even if it seems at some point that the list of their demands becomes shorter and more reasonable, then the next statement brings back the long and absurd list of demands which really are not acceptable and cannot be acceptable at any point for Ukraine's for Ukrainians. So it seems like they're not serious about making their demands potentially acceptable. So to give Ukrainians a serious signal that they want a compromise, they want a deal. Maybe they are just winning the time, or maybe they are pressuring Ukraine behind the scenes, or maybe all their public statements are just smokescreen. I don't know.
Pavel, let me ask you the same question. Do you believe that these talks, in the format that they have taken place thus far, can actually yield a result, that they might actually end the fighting, bring about some type of meaningful ceasefire?
Well, it's good, of course, to have talks than not to have talks. But the positions of the two sides are miles apart. That's so obvious. And actually, on the technical side, I don't really like the composition, at least of the Russian delegation. It doesn't really indicate that Russia really means that much real business. It's not very optimistic forecast, because the leader of the delegation, Mr. Medinsky, is not from Putin's inner circle. He doesn't have, he has zero diplomatic experience, not even a politician, a former culture minister, and before that, a popular nationalistic self-styled historian. If Russia wanted to do something really, achieving a hard kind of negotiated but compromise, a person like Dmitry Kozak, with lots of experience in diplomacy and very much well knowing the Ukrainian situation, would have been leading the team, and not Mr. Medinsky, who, of course, could translate the Ukrainian position to the Kremlin and back the Kremlin position to the Ukrainians, but doesn't have the pull or the capability to negotiate anything on his own. And the general staffs of the both sides are not really represented at the table. And this is very much a military situation. If we want a ceasefire, I mean, it's a complicated military situation. Just declaring a ceasefire won't bring a stop to the fighting in the present position. So I'm not optimistic that there will be soon any kind of breakthrough in the talks.
Ulrich, you've heard now what both Pavel and Volodymyr have had to say. What do you think? Do you think that real, substantial, meaningful change can be brought about by these talks? Or do you believe, as some analysts do, that this is just a way for President Putin perhaps to buy time? And what do you think about the sincerity of both sides when it comes to these talks?
Well, I don't think that we can compare the sincerity of both sides, because what we see is an aggressor that invaded a country without a provocation from the Ukrainian side, and announcing very extreme positions, what he announced as the objectives of this military operation, which is nothing less than an invasion. So it's really like a rapist and a victim sit down and negotiate the terms of what will happen next. It's certainly not a situation that can be fixed by a military solution. And so I also agree, as the other two guests said already, that it's very unlikely that we will see anything that is a breakthrough or a reliable result of negotiations anytime soon.
Pavel, is Russia's military strategy shifting right now? And if so, how is it shifting?
Well, it's clear that the blitzkrieg didn't work out, though officially President Putin is saying that everything's on track, everything's on plan. It doesn't seem to be so. But Russia still has the upper hand in terms of heavy weaponry, in terms of long-range missiles of different sorts. Russia can hit any target in any part of Ukraine, and Ukraine cannot hit back against the centers of military preparations and in defense industry in Russia. So Russia has that advantage. It has the initiative, more or less still, and is pushing along. But the problem, of course, is that it's spring has come. And that means Russian forces will be totally limited to roads, spreading out into the countryside, especially in the northern parts of the front, where there's Chernozem, as it's known in Russian and Ukrainian. Well, that doesn't work. Tanks get stuck down in that mud. So that means it's going to be rather static, more warfare, like the siege of Mariupol, maybe some other cities, until maybe a month's time will go at least before it begins to dry up, especially in the north. And then the fighting most likely will pick up. The Ukrainians are mobilizing, moving, getting more soldiers to the front line and getting weapons from the West. Russia most likely also could begin some kind of form of mobilization, as it is becoming clear that this will be a dragged out campaign. So right now, I believe it's going to be very static. Sieges, small movements, and bloody movements, not at the time for long kind of deep operations, armored columns moving around. You can't do that before it dries up.
Pavel, you know, there are some analysts who are now positing that the conflict has become a stalemate. Would you agree with that assessment?
Well, it's not yet really a stalemate. Russia has the initiative. When they say in Ukraine, Russia has already lost, well, no, it did lose. But the blitzkrieg didn't work. That's also clear. They'll have to come up with something. I'm not sure that really that is fully thought through or understood. Increasingly number of people here say if in the present situation, Russia should begin to mobilize. Call up, I don't know, maybe a million reservists. You have to train them because they're totally untrained. They'll need at least several months of basic training before you can begin bringing more manpower to the front, because it's a long drawn out campaign. Russia will need at least a million soldiers to occupy and control large parts of Ukraine. It didn't do that yet. Ukraine is the territory Russia controls is Ukraine is minuscule compared to the country, and Russia will continue long range attacks closer to the borders of Poland and Romania and Slovakia and Hungary to try to hit Ukrainian defense industry, military bases, the supply lines of weapons and munitions coming in from the West, and besiege Mariupol. And maybe after it falls, which I don't know when is going to happen, surely, they'll try to move further on to Nikolaev and Odessa and to the Transnistria Republic.
Volodymyr, Moscow's conditions include Ukraine declaring itself neutral, Ukraine acknowledging the Crimea Peninsula as Russian territory, and Kyiv recognizing the separatist regions of Donetsk and Lugansk as independent. Would Ukraine agree to those conditions?
You forgot one more important demand, namely the so-called demilitarization, keeping the general capacity, defense capacity, military capacity of Ukraine low, and makes the combination of neutrality and demilitarization highly problematic, and thus highly unlikely for Ukrainians to accept. In Ukrainian society, there is a predominant belief, actually, that none of these conditions can be accepted, but the degree of acceptability is different. So there is a sizable minority, something like a third of respondents in recent surveys, accepting that Ukraine might renounce its NATO ambition. But for recognition of Crimea and these Donbass puppet republic, the percentage something like 10%. So overwhelming majority of the population rejects these demands. But in terms of NATO membership, this could potentially be acceptable, even if problematic and very difficult to implement, actually, because it's a constitutional norm. It requires two-thirds of the parliament votes and a reconfiguration of public opinion. So it's very difficult, but potentially could be acceptable at some point if it is decoupled from the demand of demilitarization. So the logic is like this. Either Ukraine is a NATO member and can have a limited army but be under NATO umbrella, or Ukraine doesn't have any NATO or other military alliance umbrella and needs to have its own strong and capable army. So both are definitely a non-starter.
Ulrich, if one is talking about the possibility of Ukraine declaring itself neutral or demilitarizing or pledging not to try to join NATO going forward, one would assume that Ukraine in return would need some guarantees of its security. And if that were the case, who potentially would act as guarantors for Ukraine's security going forward?
Exactly. This is one of the big question marks, and it leads us back to the time when Ukraine became a sovereign state and accepted the conditions of being a sovereign state by giving up its nuclear arsenal, by receiving the security guarantees from Western forces, which didn't lead to anything, because now in this situation with the invasion, the West was very clear from the start that NATO will not fight on Ukrainian territory. So I personally don't see what kind of neutrality status practically changes anything that was the situation before. NATO didn't invite Ukraine to become a member. It wasn't on the agenda. And I don't see this as a territorial conflict. Putin was very clear that what he actually wants is to restore the dignity and pride of the Soviet Union and wants to rewrite history and wants NATO to move back to the borders of 89, which means that Ukraine is only the beginning. And if he loses the military operation or the invasion in Ukraine, then we don't know what the limits are, because if he's cornered, he doesn't have anything to lose, and then he can cross red lines and make use of his destructive arsenal that goes beyond imagination.
Pavel, if a negotiated settlement between Ukraine and Russia could actually be reached, would President Putin be willing to agree to allow President Zelensky to stay in power, or would President Putin want to see President Zelensky out of power?
I believe he wants him out of power. In any ways, he doesn't like him. That's rather clear. And we want to see someone else in the presidential position in Ukraine. Of course, the Ukrainian president actually doesn't have that much power under the Ukrainian constitution. It's more a parliamentary republic than a presidential one. So that's not really the real issue, apparently, here. It's really what the objectives of this operation are, and can Putin accept that his gamble didn't work out and try to cut the losses or double down? I think he's going to double down. That's what everyone says, but of course, you never know. Maybe he'll decide to cut losses and retreat. What happened in Georgia when we could have gone to Tbilisi but didn't, and kind of settled for some kind of compromise of sorts. So I don't know for sure. I can't guess. But right now, I believe it's going to continue. Maybe even this war may drag on till the fall. That's also possible. So this right now seems to be turning into a war of attrition. But actually, Russia cannot win a war of attrition against the United West, where Ukraine is just a proxy fighting on the battlefield, but the entire West and its entire defense industry is working to arm them with the most modern weapons. Well, Russia has to rely on its defense industry, which is today not like in the time of the Soviet Union, the Cold War. It's not actually able to produce mass-produce weapons or munitions that are right now being spent at the high level in the medium at least, intensity conflict. So it's a problem. It can drag on to the fall, but then there's going to be a very serious crisis on the Russian side. They'll have to do something to either end it in some kind of way. I don't know how that's going to play out.
Volodymyr, based on how things are going thus far, I'm talking about how things are going in the conflict and also how things are going at the negotiating table. Do you think that there is a potential for direct talks between President Zelensky and President Putin at some point?
I frankly don't see much of a point in personal talks. It's mostly a symbolic issue. Zelensky, based on his previous preference for direct contact, still wants to talk to Putin. Putin seems to be reluctant, but at some point he signaled that for the final deal, he might be willing to meet Zelensky. I see nothing that cannot be delivered through intermediates, through the delegation. So Putin definitely would love to preside over a military parade of the victory of Russia in Kyiv or Mariupol or wherever, but that's not going to happen. So for talks which give Russia less than what it wanted, he might not to be willing to be personally involved. So I don't know. There are some talks about potential meeting in Turkey. It depends on whether the parties actually make a deal. Zelensky would definitely want a personal meeting to seal the deal. Whether Putin wants that or not depends on how much he can get. Right now, it seems like he's still unwilling to accept the fact that he cannot get what he really wanted. Maybe he still believes that he can muster additional troops and additional weapons and he can still get the whole package. That's not going to happen. And I want to comment on Pavel's statement that Ukraine is or will just be a proxy in the West's war on Russia or against Russia. That's not true. Ukraine is far from a proxy. Ukraine is actually the vital part of the war. Even if we accept that the West is actually against Russia in that war, which is not really true. Now it's Russia versus Ukraine, and Ukraine is fighting not only heroically but capably. And the West, of course, supplies weapons, but the West keeps its distance, doesn't want to incur any losses and actually get directly involved in. So Ukraine demonstrated that it's a vital part, it's a crucial part mm-hmm. of that defense line against Russian aggression.
Ulrich, I saw you nodding along to some of what Volodymyr was saying. It looked like you wanted to jump in. I'll let you do that. But I also wanted to ask you if you think there are any international actors out there who might be able to offer a credible diplomatic off-ramp to President Putin.
Well, then the answer is clearly China, because no one else has as much leverage as China has. After 2014, Russia had no other choice than turning its face towards the East and becoming very dependent on China. And if China can't afford rising energy prices and doesn't want to take the risk of a global recession as an unintended side effect of the massive Western sanctions, which also means that time is not on the side of Russia. When we look at the bigger picture, militarily, maybe it is, but economically speaking and financially speaking, it certainly isn't. And the other side effects are that the West is united. The West is cutting off its energy dependency from Russia. We are seeking frantically for other suppliers of energy and change into renewable energy economy. Mm-hmm. Which destroys the Russian economic model. There are so many counter effects of this intervention. And in the end, it's all in Beijing's hand if mm-hmm. it takes long or shorter, but Beijing hasn't decided yet.
All right. Well, we have run out of time, so we're going to have to leave the conversation there. Thanks so much to all of our guests, Volodymyr Kulik, Ulrich Brückner, and Pavel Felgenhauer. And thank you, too, for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Mohammed Jamjoum, and the whole team here, bye for now.